So again, this is case 822-1621, Hader Properties LLC et al. Versus State of Minnesota. As all parties are aware, the appellant will have 15 minutes for their argument in chief. The respondent will have 15 minutes. And finally, the appellant will have 5 minutes for rebuttal. So whenever you're ready, just approach the microphone, adjust it to your level, and tell us who you are in a loud, clear voice, please.
Thank you, Your Honors. May it please the court and counsel, my name is William Young. I'm here on behalf of the state. The question in this case is whether the abutter's right of access travels down a public road to parcels that do not abut the access opening. In Finke, this court answered that exact question in the negative. In doing so, this court applied the Supreme Court's holding and analysis in Correll. Because that right does not travel down a public roadway to parcels that do not abut the opening, the district court should be affirmed as to its rejection of respondents' argument that they hold a private easement to that access right. But because the district court nonetheless held that the respondents possess an access opening, when they only own property that does not abut the access opening after it was acquired in 1963, that portion of the district court's order should be reversed. In short, the respondents did not own any right of access that could have been acquired by MnDOT's 2014 condemnation action, or 2014 construction action, in which they acquired other parcels through condemnation that actually did possess that right of access at that time. So property law has commonly been referred to as a bundle of sticks. And in those sticks, you have the right, you have the stick of ownership, the stick of exclusive use to exclude others. You can alienate or sell. There's a lot of sticks in that bundle. One of those sticks in Minnesota is the abutter's right of access stick. And in 1963, there was a 30-plus acre parcel of land, and MnDOT acquired about 9 acres of property from that parcel. So they acquired that ownership of that 9-acre stick. They also acquired the abutter's right of access that was left with the 30-acre owner at that time, except for at the northwest corner of that remainder of the parcel. So they took the big stick and they kind of cut it, probably took, let's say, 3/4 of that stick. Then in 1976, the successors in interest of the 1963 owners platted their property. And in doing so, they made very intentional decisions as to what rights they were creating and what privileges they were creating and what disadvantages they were creating in making that plat. And they took that remainder of the access stick, that 1/4 stick that was left, and they chopped it up again and gave it to the ultimately the parties that owned lots 1 and 2, the two that abutted that access opening. Now, for everybody else in that plat, they awarded them a roadway that would connect throughout the whole plat to the other broader public road system. They could have created a private roadway, a private easement, like the private easement that was created in the Bryant case on the island of the Shady Island in Lake Minnetonka, in which only owners on the plat could get to the beach. They chose not to do so. That decision was intentional. When we're interpreting plats, we have to follow the words on the plat. And that's exactly what MnDOT did when they determined there was no right of access that could be acquired from the owners of lots 5 through 9, not the owners of lots 1 and 2.
How do you respond, counsel? I'm looking on page 26 of respondent's brief. They're referring to the final certificate. Describes the 8.9 acres taken and then describes the access taken as follows, except that the abutting owner shall retain the right of access extended northwesterly from the most westerly corner of the last above described triangular piece. So how does that certificate affect your argument? The language in that certificate affect your argument?
So there's the two figures in our initial brief that were filed, figures 1 and 2, that have the maps of this property, well, the broader area. Both of them have a red line that depicts where the access was acquired. The green line, I believe it's on figure 1, not on figure 2, shows where that northwesterly opening is. And that area hasn't been disputed by any of the parties. It's consistent with the Cannondale Center plat. It's consistent with the MnDOT monumentation plats. And when the Cannondale Center plat was created, that's what created those lots 1 through 11 with only lots 1 and 2 abutting that opening. So before the plat was created, the entire 30-acre remainder had that access right. But the owner at the time then chopped it up into pieces and made the intentional decision to give it to some but not to others. and instead to give them a public roadway that was accepted by the city and constructed and still remains open. So that way the owners, when they bought into the other parcels of the plat, or the other lots in the plat, such as lots 5 through 9 we're talking about here, don't have to be responsible for maintenance of that roadway, for any liability. It's a benefit they receive that they don't have to maintain it, but they also have the detriment of not having a private easement. It just doesn't travel down the roadway. In Finke, the landowner also abutted two roadways, like in here, where we have Cassaw 24 to the north, 52 to the east. In Finke, it was 13 to the east and Cliff Road to the south. When the opening to the owner of a lot that abutted Cliff Road to the south, but not Highway 13, when some changes were made to the road system, because they just happened to abut a public roadway on the plat in Finke, that did not mean their right of access was taken, because they did not have a private right of access. They did not abut the access opening that was acquired. That's what this court held in Finke. It's exactly the same fact scenario as here, where it's a party that bought onto a plat that abuts a publicly platted roadway on the plat that ultimately flows into a trunk highway, but it does not mean the right of access was acquired. The Supreme Court's decision in Carrell also confirms this exact analysis. In Carrell, there were three different lots that are discussed on the plat, lots 4, 5, and 1. Lot 1 abutted the access opening. When the state ultimately acquired lot 1, of course, acquiring the access opening at the same time because they acquired the entirety of that lot, the Supreme Court did not say, well, because lots 4 and 5 are on the same plat, they automatically had their right of access taken. Instead, it remanded back to see if lots 4, 5, and 1 had been merged into common ownership at some time between the platting and the actual acquisition of lots 1. That remand would be entirely unnecessary if, by simply being on the virtue of the plat, they were entitled to the right of access that accrues to a different lot on that same plat. When MnDOT acquired the right of access in 1963 from the area that abutted that they actually acquired and left the opening, they needed to have finality for what they acquired. They paid for something. They paid that the property was valued at the time as commercial property, and they acquired almost 9 acres of land and a right of access. They expended money to do so, and yet here we are 60 years later. I believe it was about $9,000. It may be in the record, but I'm not entirely sure, Your Honor.
So that $9,000 extinguished whatever rights Mr. Alger's clients have.
It extinguished those rights because the owners in 1963, the Seversons, when they subsequently committed to their own LLC and then platted it, they took away that access stick from the part of the property that Mr. Alger's clients own, that the respondents own. They could have done it differently, and if that was the case, we'd have a completely different question before the court, completely different analysis potentially, but because they chose to sever that access opening from all points where the respondents, the platters.
Thank you.
When the platters in 1976 created those 11 lots, they had that right to convey it. They had that remainder of that stick left, and they chose to slice it up and to give it out to 1 and 2 and not to give it to 3 through 11. That they had a menu of options, or they had a range of options before them, and this is the intentional decision that they made. If they had done it differently, it would be a different question now. But because they did the exact same fact pattern that this court considered in Finke, the analysis should be the same.
What was the date of the Cannondale Center plat map? That's 76?
I believe it was 1976, Your Honor.
All right. And then there's a separate plat map that... maybe there's more than one. I shouldn't assume
there
I know everything.
There are quite a few plat maps.
It's a complicated case. There is a plat map that doesn't show the Cannondale Center, but does show the right-of-way that we've been talking about from that little corner. And when was that right-of-way platted?
At about the same time, MnDOT...
That's what confuses me.
Yes.
The dates are very close.
It was
close.
Also in the mid-70s, MnDOT created a monumentation plat, which is when they went back and actually installed monuments and platted it consistent with what they had acquired in the 60s, pursuant to the final certificate. The Cannondale Center, the points on the Cannondale Center map and the MnDOT plat map are consistent. There's no dispute as to where those monuments are located and where those points are. There's also no dispute as to where that access opening remained. And when MnDOT came back in 2014, they acquired that right of access from the abutting landowners who wanted it acquired at that time. So much like in Finke, where this court noted in the fact section that MnDOT acquired the right of access through condemnation from several of the other lot owners on the Finke plat, there was just no need to acquire it from specifically from the Finke lot because it did not abut the opening.
The legal significance, though, of platting a right-of-way, talk about that, because it seems to me to have influenced the district court's decision. I could be wrong.
Of MnDOT, I'm sorry, I'm not entirely understanding the question.
I'm just saying that, you know, as I said, and I think you're agreeing with me, but correct me if I misunderstand, we do have two plat maps, one of which, at least two, but one of which recognizes this right-of-way, and the other, like you, as you described, that depicts the Cannondale Center with the public road, and I think supports your position that there's some differentiation between what the right-of-way attaches to. And what's the significance of the platting itself?
If I understand your question, Your Honor, the two plats, and I'll just focus on the two from the 1970s, the Cannondale Center map and the contemporary MnDOT map, they should be read side by side. One is depicting the property rights from, let's say, the east.
So, why do I care? You're assuming I know too much. So why do I care what's in the plat? What's the legal significance of platting a right-of-way?
Well, for MnDOT platting the right-of-way, it's just actually documenting the points. You know, they can have surveyors go out and document so they actually know exactly where the widths of the right-of-way are. In some places, it's, you know, 100 feet from the center line. In some places, it's wider, narrower. It's just to go back and actually record and monument so there's no dispute going forward where MnDOT's rights are. And for the Cannondale Center plat, the benefit for a developer is that they can now create these different lots and then dispose of them
again,
as they wish.
And again, you're assuming I know. I'm interested in the reasons, the reasons for the DOT doing something or the reasons for the developer doing something. But I guess what I'm looking for is the legal right and claim and how we analyze that. So what we have are deeds or agreements, you know, these pieces of property with references to the plat. And doesn't that make the plat itself of great legal significance and what we see?
Thank you, Your Honor. I think I understand the question.
Yeah, and I'm sorry if I wasn't clear.
The MnDOT plat doesn't really do anything for private rights. It's just documenting what MnDOT has previously acquired. And so when MnDOT platted it, they left open, they have the monumentation point, I think it's B19, which is at the northwest corner, angling towards where CASA 24 is. That was the end of where the right-of-way was acquired, as depicted on figure one, where the red line switches to the green line. So for MnDOT's purposes, they're not doing the platting for anything that has to do with, you know, valuation or development or whatever. It's just to denote their legal rights. When the owners of the Cannondale Center property are platting it, they're then doing it for purposes of development to make it more usable. And they can do whatever they wish on their platted property. They have, at that point in time, all the sticks that were remaining after the MnDOT acquisition. So they have the remaining 25-plus acres of property that they can do with however they want. They could create private easements. Like, for example, many of the strip malls we see throughout the state have, they're platted strip malls, but there's private easements, so the tanning salon and the shoe store and the Subway sandwich all have rights in and out through private easement rights. They could have chose to go that pathway. They did not do so here. They chose to do a public right-of-way, and they donated to the public, and the township and now the city of Cannon Falls accepted that donation and has maintained the road since that point in time.
And your claim, I think, is that Hayter also accepted that, right?
Well, because the respondents specifically accepted it by buying into the plat. They could only buy into the rights that the people who sold it to them could convey.
So in 1963, there was nothing Hayter could have done.
I'm not
to, you know, have his abutters right of access under your analysis. I mean, he was stuck because, you know, the owner of the rest of the land didn't do anything, so you're bound by him, and that's too bad.
Hayter bought into the plat as it existed in 2001 when the respondents bought to the property. Other different things could have happened with the deeds and the platting process between 1963 and 2001 that could have created a private easement to that opening if it had been denoted and depicted in the deeds and all those things. It just didn't happen here. So there are ways that they could have had that right, but based upon the factual record here, they did not. They never had that right in the first place.
What
when they
could
bought
they have done?
Well, they could have negotiated with the owners of lots 1 and 2 to acquire some of that right. I mean, they could have reached out to the people who possessed that stick.
But why on earth would they do that when they didn't know what was going to happen, you know, now? I mean, who? I'm sure many people are prescient and know exactly what DOT is going to do in 25 years to various accesses to shopping centers. I'm not one of them. And things change. So, Mr. Mitchell, you know, these, all the cases you've cited and that we've read, you know, they're very, very fact specific. And, you know, lot of the older cases did not contemplate shopping centers and highways. I agree that the Lake Minnetonka case says what it says, but that's because even in the 19th century, everyone knew what lakefront property was worth, and by God, everyone wanted to have access to it. But here, I mean, the Hayter property is in a much different position now as a result of this. Am I correct?
Yes. Well,
I mean, it's a. Who on earth in this day and age, when everyone's shopping on the internet, is even going to malls? Well, no one's going to go to a mall that they can't get to, which they used to. I mean, that just. I have a specific concern that on the unique facts and circumstances of this case, the cases you're citing don't really quite apply. I mean, I understand they say what they say, and you're making a very compelling argument, but I have concerns that this is just slightly a little different.
And, Your Honor, I see that I'm out of time. If I could briefly respond and then
please,
address in rebuttal.
Thank you. Very much, Mr. Young.
The principle that is longstanding in property law is that, you know, property
you're
owners
stuck.
Are on notice.
You're stuck.
Exactly. I hate to take the
terrible way out. That is the argument.
You buy in what you buy in, and if you didn't do your due diligence, too bad. But I will reserve my time for rebuttal. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Young. We'll now hear for counsel for respondent and cross appellant, please.
Good morning, Your Honors, and may it please the court. My name is Stuart Elger. I'm here on behalf of respondents, Hayter Properties, LLC, the Schoenfelders, and Cannon Power Sports. This case concerns the closure of an at-grade signalized intersection in Cannon Falls that served the Hayter Properties property, that provided crucial access to its customers that sought to access this highway commercial property and the business that was situated on the property, Cannon Power Sports. As of the date of the closure of the at-grade intersection, which was September 2, 2014, the Hayter property enjoyed rights of access to Trunk Highway 52 and County State Aid Highway 24. That right of access stems from two longstanding and well-established legal principles in Minnesota. The first is that the property had an easement of access stemming from the Hayter property's position as owners of lots or lots within the Cannondale Center subdivision. The second is that Hayter Properties property had an abutters right of access to Kasaw 24 and Trunk Highway 52.
Had they ever exercised that right and had direct and immediate access?
Yes, throughout the history of Cannon Power Sports, the history of the ownership and development of this property, which stems back, Your Honor, to approximately 2000. This property had been developed for commercial highway use, retail use, where customers access the property through this intersection and onto 64th Avenue to the Cannon Power Sports property.
But your claim is that you abut 52 on the two lots, two of the seven lots you have or whatever it is, and that gives you the right. But did you ever abut Highway 52, did you ever actually have an access created that was direct and immediate on those two lots to Highway 52?
Yes, through the service road. The service road, which became 64th Avenue when the city...
Did the service road go immediately to 52 then?
Well, it traveled along the would be the easterly boundary of the Cannondale Center subdivision property up to the access opening that had been specifically preserved by MnDOT back in 1963 when it did a realignment of Trunk Highway 52. So if you're asking, Your Honor, whether there was a driveway that went from the Hayter property directly east out to 52 without going north or south? The answer is no. The roadway, the access was always through 64th Avenue up to the access opening that had been specifically preserved in 1963, as memorialized in the final certificate that set forth the rights that had been acquired.
That goes to your easement argument? That doesn't go to your abuttal argument, does it?
Both, Your Honor. The abutters... I'll address the abutters argument first. The abutters argument begins with the fact that this property does abut Trunk Highway 52. There's no dispute about that. It owns the fee under 64th Avenue. It's an abutter. And as an abutter, it has a right of access to 52 unless that access has been taken. And in this case, that access was not taken because an access opening was created that benefited the entire parent tract in 1963. And this property is part of that parent tract and enjoys the benefit of its position at being in the parent tract, having a right of access to 252 up at that, what we're calling the access opening, where the service road now explicit or directly abuts Highway 52 and 24. Also, I mean, the easement itself goes to that.
Mr. Young's argument is, it's not that, you know, you're part of a plat that abuts it, that some of the property, that you're part of a parcel and some of that abuts it. It's whether, his argument is that your specific lot doesn't. Now, why is he wrong, Mr. Alger?
It's got to be
the specific property that abuts it, and I'm not so sure the service road, following up on Judge Kerr's question, I'm not sure abutting the service road gets you where you want to be. But beyond that, why is he wrong when it's got to be the actual parcel has to abut, not sort of like the parcel next to the parcel that abuts? Why is he wrong?
Well, as I understand the state's position, Your Honor, they don't dispute that this property abuts Highway 52 right of way, and that's under the law of the state. When a roadway is platted, what's conveyed to the public is a terminable easement only, and that's the Owsley decision and a number of decisions that Owsley referred to. So there's no dispute here that this property, the Hayter property, abuts 52 physically. It abuts it. Its fee interest abuts 52. What I understand to be the state's argument is that when it took access control, along that portion of the Hayter property that abuts 52, it took all rights of access to the Hayter property. And their position is that this is the fault of the subdivision developer, that if the subdivision developer hadn't subdivided the property and hadn't taken certain steps to create private easements that would have benefited the parcels that don't abut the access opening that remained, that this property would have preserved a right of access. But that's simply not the law. And you can look at the Correll decision for an example of where the Minnesota Supreme Court held that an owner of a lot that doesn't abut the highway, now in this case, there's no question we do abut, but where a property doesn't abut the highway, that it could still have the right of access based on a couple of conditions that the Correll court pointed to.
Counsel, did you ever read this court's unpublished opinion, non-precedential opinion in Yarman?
In, sorry, which case?
Yarman.
Yarman, I have read it, Your Honor.
You understand it's fairly similar to yours in that it's a very similar act by the state in taking a lighted intersection away and replacing it with interchanges. And in that case, we held that if you hadn't exercised your abuttal right to immediate access in the past, that you didn't have it for purposes of inverse condemnation. And the Supreme Court, although petitioned for review, denied review on that position. And you understand who wrote that opinion, I suspect, too.
As I understand, as I have a guess, a suspicion. As I understand the Yarman case, this is the one that related to property up in Rice, Minnesota. Is that right?
I thought it was Ramsey, but maybe it was Rice.
My copy says Benton County.
Benton,
just for the record.
It probably is Rice.
Benton County, and the issue there, Your Honor, was whether that property lost reasonably convenient and suitable access to the highway in question. And as I understand the facts of that case, the state had constructed certain roads that provided their frontage roads, and the determination of the court in Yarman was that as a matter of law, there was no loss, that the owner couldn't demonstrate a loss of reasonably convenient and suitable access because the access, the new frontage road provided sufficient access. It wasn't the situation as here, Your Honor, where there was a plat at issue. And addressing Judge Bradfield's questions about the plats, the monumentation plat, and I think counsel for MnDOT acknowledges this, the monumentation plat that's referred to in the facts did not establish any rights with respect to property owners. It was a document that MnDOT filed to indicate in MnDOT's view the rights that it had. But that monumentation plat, just to be clear, shows the access opening that's at issue here. The Cannondale Center plat, which wasn't a factor in the Yarman case, but is critically important here, creates a service road, and that service road provides access directly to the access point that was preserved for this property, the parent tract that was owned by the Seversons back in 1963. And under the law of the state that dates back to the 19th century, someone who buys a property with reference to a plat, and this is what Hayter Properties did, you know, we're not claiming that the Hayter Properties got stuck. Hayter Properties bought their property with reference to a plat that identified a public road that led to the access point that provided crucial access to the property. And that plat, under longstanding principles in the state, provides certainty to the Hayter owners that they can develop their property, use it for commercial purposes, knowing that they have a private right in that easement itself to get their customers to and from their property from 52 and Kassaw 24. And
how's that right any different than the public's? Because the plat dedicated the roadway to public use, not to private use.
That's right, but the owners of lots abutting that within the plat also have a private easement in that street. It's similar to the abutter's right, actually, Your Honor. You know, the abutter's right is a special right that property owners have that's different from the public. The public has the right to use the street for transportation purposes, but an abutter has several important rights. One of them, a right of access to that street. That's not a public right. That's a private right in the street. Similarly here, the lot owners in the Cannondale Center lot enjoy a private right in that easement that they know that road will be open and remain open to provide them access to, in this case, Highway 52 and Kassaw 24, which is crucial for the use and development of their property. And that principle, Your Honor, comes out of law of the Minnesota Supreme Court dating back into the mid-19th century and was recently affirmed by the Minnesota Supreme Court, well, relatively recently, in 1950 in the Bryant v. Gustafson case, where the court reaffirmed the principle that when an owner, a lot owner in a subdivision, buys the lot with reference to the plat, the owner takes all rights and privileges and easements represented in that plat. That's a private right. It's a right that is attendant to the property itself. It's not a public right, but it's a private, specific right, a special privilege that the owners of the lot have in the public street. And that sort of right in a public street is well established. It's not controversial. It's the basis for the abutter's right, as I said. And if you look at the decision in Adams, which is another 19th century case, the court said there, the private right vests when the public right vests. So when the public builds the road and puts and creates an abutting property, the private right in that road, the abutter's right to access light and air, vests immediately. In this case, the private right is an abutter's right, but also an easement right.
Didn't agree with that argument, I take it, huh?
Yeah, the trial court agreed with the abutter's right argument, but disagreed on the easement right, Your Honor. That's correct. One of the concerns the trial court had was creating a possible parade of horribles, if that's the right metaphor. Concerned that by recognizing the private easement in this case, it would recognize an easement that extended to roads far beyond the particular area in question here. But I don't think that concern obtains here. Because the right stems from this plat, and under the facts of this case, that plat provides access to a particular access point and a particular highway 52, Land Casaw 24. This recognizing that longstanding right doesn't suddenly create a right in lot owners to streets spread out well beyond the particular area of this plat. And again, that whatever policy concern that the court had with respect to that should give way to the important right, the importance of recognizing the plat, what the court in Gilbert v. Emerson called, you know, sacred, because it creates rights that everyone is relying on, buyers and sellers, people who own property and are developing. It's critically important that the owners of the Hayter property could rely on this plat that provided them access to 52 and 24.
May Judge Connolly?
Please go ahead, Judge.
Just one question. You mentioned Bryant versus Gustafson is what you, I heard you say that you think that's your best authority for recognizing this private right of easement, even though it's a public road that we're looking at.
Yes, Your Honor, I believe it is.
That's true on the facts of the case? You think it's your best legal authority based on the facts of Bryant? I mean, I realize all of these property cases are unique, right?
I would guess so, Your Honor. It is very strong legal precedent to support this case on its facts. Now, in Bryant, of course, the road in question led to Lake Minnetonka, but the fact that it was a lake rather than a key access point is a distinction without a difference. What the Bryant court
said. Except if you live on Lake
Minnetonka. Yes.
Well, I get it.
In terms of the legal application of the legal principle.
Same principle.
Yes.
You know, one's buying this plat if they didn't think they could get to the lake. No one would have bought this property if all of a sudden their customers can't get there.
They certainly would pay a lot less for it.
Yes.
And
probably not buy it at all.
Right. And like the Bryant court said, you know, a road leads somewhere. I think that's really great language. A road leads somewhere. It's not just a road that provides public travel, which a private road or a public road would. This road in Bryant led to the lake, and that meant something. Here, and this is why I think the Bryant case is compelling, Your Honor, an analogous argument. Here, this road led to the access opening that was specifically created. It didn't just wander north. It followed the subdivision property to that access point, and from there, that traffic could get immediately over to 52, which was critical for this property.
But that applied to everybody, and if the rights, the public's rights, how does it matter whether he has a private right or not?
Because if that public road is lost, the public doesn't have a damages claim for damages to their property, but this property would. If that road were vacated, were closed, were somehow interfered with, the owners of this property would be damaged because they have a special right, an easement, and that's exactly what happened here, Your Honor. The state closed the northerly at-grade intersection and interfered with an important right that the owners of this property have. That's not a claim that the public brings. That's a claim that the owner brings because of their special right and privilege in 64.
But there were all kinds of people that were hurt by that, and a number of them, like the oil company that had a gas station and two restaurants and the like, were just out of luck.
And that the law in the state is that if you're not in a butter, if you don't have a particular right, you could be damaged, but you don't get damages. That's right. It's often a problem for property owners who don't immediately abut, that they could be harmed by the closure of an intersection and get nothing because they don't have a private right that's been taken. But in this case, Your Honor, there is a private right. It stems from the two legal principles. There are two rights.
But you have to have the other decision of the trial court on the right to use that road and to make that access to the north in order for the other to work, because your abut argument doesn't work where you haven't ever utilized it for immediate and direct access to Highway 52.
The issue is not immediate and direct access, it's whether you had access. And under Correll, the lot owners of lot 4 and 5, they didn't have direct access to the highway in question. In fact, they didn't even abut the highway in question. But the court still said, if you could show that this lots 4 and 5 were part of a parent tract, which included the lot 1 that did abut, owned by a single owner, and for the same use, then the lots 4 and 5 would succeed to the right of access that had been held by lot 1. As counsel pointed out, lot 1 had been eliminated, had been taken for the reconstruction of Highway 12 or I-94, and lots 4 and 5 hadn't abutted the existing right-of-way. But the Correll court said, nonetheless, and this is actually recognized in the Finke decision, nonetheless, lots 4 and 5 could have succeeded to the abutter's right if there had been a parent tract that abutted and that had been used for a single use. And that's in the Correll decision. And there's no question under the facts in this case that both those conditions obtain. This property was owned by the Seversons, a parent tract used for the same commercial purposes on the date that the access opening was created. And so under Correll, there's really no question, as a matter of law, you can conclude that the Hayter properties succeeded to the rights of the parent that were held by the parent owner.
Isn't Correll distinguishable because the third factor, which goes back to the 1963 condemnation?
Having to do with a frontage road?
No, having to do with access. Let's see. I mean, if you look at the language of Correll, it seems like you don't meet that third factor that says the state condemned the abutting lot to build a new road while the greater parcel was still intact and deprived that parcel of access to the new road without paying damages. How do you meet that part of the Correll decision?
In Correll, the court said if and I'm reading from toward the end of that decision, the record suggests that Correll may have succeeded to a right of access possessed by his predecessor in title. Correll asserts that the owner of the condemned lot one, which abutted Hudson Road, which is the frontage road, also owned lots 4 and 5. The state responds that the record is unclear, but has offered no evidence rebutting the assertion. If, in fact, there were a single owner and the three lots, although prima facie distinct, were shown to have been used as a single tract, lots 4 and 5 may well have been damaged when direct access to the main traveled lanes, which they had previously enjoyed via lot 1, was taken. So as I read Correll, Your Honor, there really are two factors that, apply. Was there a single tract owned by a single owner? Did that tract have a right of access that the new lot enjoyed via that parent tract? And if so, then the owner of the lot that may not abut the highway would have succeeded to the right of access of the owner that the owner of the parent tract had. And I think that's precisely the facts of this case.
Thank you, Mr. Alger. Mr. Young, you'll have the last word, please.
Thank you, Your Honors. I'm going to start by reading a brief section from Bryant, which I think answers the question Judge Connolly was asking me at the beginning of the first time, but also was discussed in Judge Raffold's question. But on page 433, all lot purchasers are presumed to have acted with full knowledge and notice of all that appears upon the plat and with knowledge of the effect thereof. So that's kind of goes back to your stuck argument that we were talking about at the end. You bought into a public roadway that was donated and dedicated to the public. You get the benefits of that, and you get the disadvantages of that. And you can't really have it both ways. And so if this plat had created a private easement that traveled that down, we'd have a different question here. But we have a public easement that was dedicated and donated to the public, and the respondents are presumed to have purchased with full knowledge of the terms of the plat. And that gets into the distinctions between, in Bryant v. Gustafson, they talk about how there's two roads on that island. There was a public roadway and a private roadway. Only the owners
Council,
on the...
Can I just interrupt you briefly? It seems to me, and maybe I misunderstand the argument of respondent, that the private easement that's claimed with regard to the service road is tied to the ownership in fee of the land, right? That the public is only getting their public easement, and I might not be using the right terminology, so you can correct me. Does that affect your argument?
It does not, Your Honor.
Anyway.
So there is no dispute that the respondents are abutting owners. They abut Highway 52 through their ownership of the underlying fee of the service road. And that's depicted on Figure 2 of our initial brief.
Abutting owners in fee. I did hear that, right?
They are abutting owners in fee, but they only abut where the right of access was previously acquired. And after it was acquired, when it was chopped up in the Cannondale Center plat, that right wasn't restored or returned or passed along to them. It was only left open at the opening, which was then passed along to the owner of Lot 1, which directly abutted the opening, and the owner of Lot 2, which abutted the opening through their underlying ownership of the fee of the service road, but where it was open next to Lot 2. And so there is no dispute. They are abutting owners, but that doesn't give them the abutter's right of access. If so, what did MnDOT acquire in 1963 when they acquired the abutter's right of access at all locations where they abut?
And I realize there's a lot of overlap. We keep moving back and forth between the abutter's right of access and this easement access. But going back to your point, I think, on the Bryant case about the plat, I think you're suggesting that the Cannondale Center plat simply doesn't show that, for instance, the Hayter properties have a private right of easement under the service road. Is that what you're saying?
Yes.
They gave that up even though they have, as I understand it, you're saying they do have fee simple except for this public right of easement. So I'm confused.
The Cannondale Center plat is silent as to what happens with the abutter's right of access, which then means we apply Minnesota longstanding case law that it only applies to the abutting landowners. The abutting landowners are the owners of Lot 1 because they abut the opening, and Lot 2 because they abut the lot opening through their ownership of the underlying fee of the portion of the service road that is adjacent to Lot 2 at the opening. But for all the other owners, Lots 3 through 11, they do not abut the opening, regardless of where any ownership of the underlying fee of the service road abuts Highway 52, because from all of those locations, that right was previously acquired. And the Finke case, again, is dispositive of this exact question. That was a lot that was being used for commercial development. It abutted a platted public road, Mill Pond Avenue, which intersected with another public road that intersected with the trunk highway. Here, 64th Avenue intersected Kassaw 24, which intersected 52. There, Mill Pond Avenue intersected, I think it was 117th Avenue, which intersected Highway 13. This court held that merely abutting a platted public road away from the access opening does not convey that access right to the owner of the non-abutting lot. And when I say non-abutting, I mean not abutting the opening. So this exact fact pattern was before this court on a commercial development property in the city of Eagan. Similarly, in Carell, the property there was a real estate office. It was another commercial property. And the fact that I think the Supreme Court's decision is silent on, but can be sort of pulled out of the decision, is that the property in Carell seems to have been platted before lots 1, 4, and 5. So the property seems to have been platted before these MnDOT highway takings and that step. The Supreme Court's decision is not clear on that point, but just reading the facts, it's the only way it makes sense. Whereas in here, Cannondale Center was platted after the 1963 acquisition. That seems to be the difference. But again, in Carell, if merely abutting, merely being on the plat, the ownership of lots 4 and 5 automatically gave you that right, there'd be no need to remand to see if the owners of 4 and 5 somehow had merged their ownership back with 1 sometime after the MnDOT taking. And that's why the timeline only makes sense that way. If your honors have any other questions, I'd be happy to answer them. Otherwise, we would ask this court to reverse the portion of the district court finding that they owned an abutter's right of access, but affirm finding that there was no private easement right of access.
This may not really impact this case, but the Supreme Court, like 2 weeks ago, had a road case on a lake.
Yep.
And it's one of the old 10-foot alleys that exist all over the place, because that's how fire departments fought fire at the turn of the century. And the Supreme Court said, you know, that may not be used as a public road or seem like a public road, but you're not going to vacate it. Because
right.
It was dedicated to the public, and we don't vacate those roads lightly. So looking at this road, it's never going to get vacated, the public's interest in it, at this point, unless there's a whole different sort of reconstruction down there. Is that a fair statement?
So in that case, the Moretzka case from, I think it was last week or 2 weeks ago, the Supreme Court talked about how platting a public road is not distinguished if it's not recorded under the Marketable Title Act, that platting is enough to preserve the public interest, and does talk about the vacation section. Here, a lot of the arguments raised by Hader are simply premature, because if 64th Avenue was ever to be vacated, which I concede is probably very unlikely, there is a statutory process for them to follow to get compensation that's negotiated out through that community. That hasn't happened yet. It's unlikely to ever happen. But if that were to happen, there is a process for them to follow. And it just hasn't happened here. And so it's not, because that process exists, it's another reason to cut against finding a private easement right of access here, because there's a different step that's going to follow that they will follow if it's ever triggered, if that road is ever going to be vacated.
Thank you, Mr. Young. Thank you, Mr. Alger.
Your Honor.
Submitted.